Hello and welcome to the Torah Simecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Aviva Orlean, and today we will be studying Shmuel Beis, Perek Yud Gimel, the 13th chapter. We had just learned about the chait of David and Bathsheba and David's admission of his guilt. And this Perek is really the continuation of the last Perek because now we will see the effect of that chait and the tremendous turmoil that occurs in David's house as a result of that chait, as part of his punishment. In this perek, we are introduced to David's three children. We were actually introduced to two of them in Perek Gimel. We have Amnon, who is David's oldest son, born to David and Ahinoam. And we have Avshalom, the third son, born to Maacha, the daughter of the king of Geshur. And we have Tamar, also born to Maacha and David. Avshalom, now to talk about the familial relationships, Avshalom and Amnon are half-brothers, having the same father and different mothers, and Avshalom and Tamar were biological full siblings, since they had the same mother and father. And Amnon and Tamar were biological half-siblings because they had the same father, David, and different mothers. Amnon's mother was Ahinoam, and Tamar's mother was Maacha. Now, the reason that I say biological half-siblings is because halachically, they may not have been considered related at all. And technically, they could have married each other. And the reason for this is because Tamar was a child born to Maacha. Maacha was a Yifas Toar who was taken by David HaMelech in war. In Parshas Ki Tsetse, the Torah tells us that when a soldier goes out to war and he sees a non-Jewish woman, a beautiful non-Jewish woman, and he desires her, he is permitted to take her and be intimate with her one time, after which point he may not touch her anymore. If he thinks that he wants to marry her and bring her home, there are very strict procedures, including bringing her home, having her mourn her parents, home, growing her nails, becoming unattractive. If the soldier still wants to keep her, he can, but she must convert first. So Tamar is the product of that first union between David and Maacha. And because she is conceived before Maacha's conversion, Tamar requires conversion after birth. And all biological relationships before her conversion become nullified. Therefore, Tamar, although biologically related to David, is halachically not related to him. And therefore, she is not halachically related to Amnon either. Which means that technically they could marry, although this was not exactly accepted practice. So let's look at the first pasuk. And it was after these things, the Navi is connecting what happened in the last chapter to what will occur in this chapter. The turmoil that occurs in David's house is a result of the chait with David and Bathsheba. So it was after those things. Ula Avshalom ben David, achos yafa. Avshalom, the son of David, had a beautiful sister, and her name was Tamar. So notice how the Navi is not saying it, that she is the daughter of David, because halachically, legally, technically, she was not officially the daughter, even though she was the biological daughter of David. Vayehava Amnon ben David. And Amnon, the son of David, loved her. So he becomes very, very obsessed with Tamar. Vayetzer la Amnon hitzkalos ba'avur Tamar achosa ki besula hi. Amnon desired her to the point that he became sick. He was lovesick for his sister Tamar because she was single. She was available. She was a virgin. But it was impossible for Amnon. He couldn't find a way to do anything to her because they were, for all intents and purposes, they were siblings. So Amnon has a good friend whose name is Yonadav ben Shimma, who was actually his first cousin. His father and David were brothers. And the Navi describes him as an ish chacham, as a wise man. But Rashi emphasizes that he was very cunning and used his wits in a very destructive manner. Malbim, as we will see later on, disagrees with this, and we will talk about this in a few moments. Yonadav sees that Amnon literally looks ill every morning and asks him what's going on. And Amnon tells Yonadav his predicament, that he has this strong desire for Tamar, but he has no access. Rashi describes Tamar as a tsnua babayis, the eini yotzeis lachutz, that she was, when it says basula, that she was single, she was in her home, she really didn't venture out. She was a princess that was really in the palace, and she didn't venture out anywhere, and therefore Amnon had no access to her. According to Radak, Amnon was so obsessed that he lost sleep at night because of this, which is why he looked so haggard in the morning. So Yonadav has a plan, and he tells Amnon the following. Feign illness so that David will be moved to visit you. And when he does visit you, tell your father the following. Say, I want Tamar, my sister, to serve me food, but have her prepare that food in front of me. And the Matsudas David explains that he should intimate that Tamar preparing the food le'enai in front of me will stimulate my appetite so that I will be able to eat, because otherwise I'm so sick that I have no appetite. So Amnon did as he was advised. David comes to see him, and Amnon makes this request, and David agrees. David then sends for Tamar and told her to go to Amnon, your brother's house, and prepare him some food. She goes in, he was lying down, she took the dough, she kneaded it, she fried it, then she cooked it in front of him, some sort of dumpling or sounds like a bagel of some sort, and she gave this food to Amnon. Amnon then orders all of his servants to leave, so they are alone together, at which point Amnon asks her to bring the food into his private chambers, which she does. She served him, she offered him the food to eat, but as Pasuk Yud Aleph tells us, instead of taking the food, he grabs her. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Pasuk 11, Vatagesh elav la'echol, and she served him, she offered him the food to eat, vayachazek ba, and he grabbed her, vayomer la, and he says to her, Boi shechvi'i miyachosi, come lie with me, my sister. Pasuk Yud Beis, Vatomer lo, and she said to him, Al achi, al ta'aneni, ki lo yaseh chein b'Yisrael. She said to him, no, don't do this to me. Don't torture me. Don't abuse me, because this is not done in Yisrael. Al taseh es hanavala azos. Don't do this abomination. We can actually hear the terror in her words. There's terror for her safety, obviously. There's terror and concern for her self-respect as an individual. But there is also her concern and her terror over her self-respect as a member of the Jewish people. This was something that we as a member of the Jewish people don't do. We're not a licentious people. Don't do this. Ki lo yaseh chein b'Yisrael al taseh hanavala hazos. How could you possibly think of doing such a thing? And Tamar continues, and she pleads with him, and she says in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Va'ani ana olich eschar pasi, va'ata tiyeh ka'achad hanavalim b'Yisrael. If you do this thing, where will I place my shame? I'm going to be so full of shame, and you're going to be like one of the nevalim, one of the low people, despicable people in Yisrael. But you know what? Va'ata daber na el hamelech ki lo yimna eini mimeka. She sort of changes tactics, and she says, why don't you speak to the king? Speak to the king. He won't forbid me to marry you. Meaning, if me'ikar hadin, we are not legally siblings, halachically siblings, then let's go speak to our father. And maybe David will allow us to marry. You want me? Fine. Let's do it the right way. But please don't do this despicable act. Abarbanel actually contends that legally they really could not marry each other. And this was just Tamar's attempt at stalling Amnon and warding him off. Unfortunately, Tamar's attempts did not work, because it said, the pasuk tells us that Amnon did not listen to her, and he grabbed her and he raped her. And pasuk Tesvav tells her that right after he rapes Tamar, the pasuk tells us, "Vayisna'eha Amnon sina gdola ma'od ki gdola hasina asher sinea me'ahava asher aheva." Right after he does this act with Tamar, now he is filled with this tremendous sense of hatred towards her. And the hatred towards Tamar was greater than that love that he had, or that supposed love that he had for Tamar at the very beginning. Vayomer la Amnon, kumi, lechi, get up and go out. And then Tamar says in Pasuk Tezayin 16, Vatomer lo, Elodos hara hagadola hazos, me'acheres asher asisa imi l'shalcheni. The fact that you are going to throw me out like dirty laundry is worse. This evil that you're doing by throwing me out of the house is worse than the first act that you did by raping me. V'lo ava l'shmo'ala, but he didn't want to listen to her. V'yikra esna aro misharso v'yomer, shilchuna ezos me'alai hachutza. He calls his servants and he says, take this, shilchuna ezos, throw this thing outside, una'ol hadelas achareha, and lock the door behind her. What Tamar was saying is that now that you have taken me against my will, there is actually a halacha that if a man rapes a woman, that now he is obligated, if he has remorse, he's obligated to actually marry this woman. So this is what Tamar is saying. Now you have an obligation to keep me, to marry me, because I'm full of shame. Where am I going to go now? But Amnon doesn't want to listen. He has this tremendous sense of hatred to her. And this hatred was really a result of the fact that he realized what he has done, and she is now a reminder of that evil that he has done. It's like a, I guess the psychological term is transference. So he looks at her now and is full of this, full of this tremendous, deep-seated hatred, and throws her out like a washed rag. Now, as we have referenced before, the Malbim contends that Yonadav's advice to Amnon to lure Tamar towards his house was not necessarily designed to bring Amnon to do this terrible chait. This is the Malbim's contention. Rather, he figured that once David hears this strange request from Amnon, and specifically the request is in Pasuk Hey, in Pasuk 5, the asasala enai es habirya laman asher erav v'achalti miyada, that Tamar should make this food so that I should see it, v'achalti miyada, that I should eat from her hand, that perhaps David's antenna would be raised, and he would figure out what was going on. And when he does, perhaps this would present an opportunity for an open discussion, and David would perhaps allow the two of them to marry because of this halachic quote-unquote glitch that we refer to. However, David does not pick up on the signs. We don't know why. Perhaps a suggestion, perhaps, is that maybe he was so worried about Amnon's health. Recall that he is aware that because of his chait with Bathsheba, that another one of his sons may die imminently because of this chait. So he had already lost his infant son, and this was perhaps weighing on his mind when he hears that Amnon is sick. That's all he's thinking about, is that perhaps he's dying. We don't know the reason. Perhaps this is just a suggestion. The Kliyakar explains as well that perhaps Yonadav was attempting to facilitate interaction between Amnon and Tamar so that Amnon would be satiated somewhat. Not that he should go and do and rape Tamar, just so that he should be satiated and his obsession should stop. Whether or not we can explain it according to the Malbim and the Kliyakar that he did not have these terrible intentions, either way, the result was quite terrible, and his advice backfired. Most commentators do look at Yonadav, however, as an opportunist, as not having any good intentions, and we will see Yonadav's true colors coming to the fore at the end of this parak again. Getting back to the storyline, Amnon casts her out, disregards Tamar's pleas, because really he had no intention of marrying her. His love for Tamar was really not a love of Tamar, it was a love of self and his obsession with filling his own desires of something that was forbidden no matter the cost. As it says in Mishlei, Mayim Gnuvim Yimtaku, stolen waters are sweeter. So Tamar is cast outside of Amnon's residence, full of pain and shame. She places ashes on her head, she tears her tunic, puts her hand on her head, and cries and wails as she left. Avshalom sees Tamar and realizes what happened and tells her to keep quiet, and he will care for her, which he does. Pasuk Chaf Aleph 21, V'hamelech David shama es kol hadavarim ha'eleh v'yichar lo ma'od. David heard everything that happened, and he became angry. And the Das Sofrim suggests perhaps David was most angry with himself, that he did not see this coming, which only adds to the tragedy of David, that he contributed to all of this pain in his house. The Navi seems to make a point of telling us that Tamar was wearing a special tunic that had woven stripes in it, a kasonis pasim it is called. And the Pasuk tells us that the royal daughters would wear these cloaks. The Malbim explains that Tamar, as a royal princess, wore a royal cloak over this Kasonas Pasim, meaning that she never went out without a cloak covering this Kasonas Pasim, and Amnon had her thrown out without being able to put on this royal cloak, thus increasing her shame even more. Now, this Kasonas Pasim certainly calls to mind the Kasonas Pasim that Yosef HaTzadik wore. Yosef is called Yosef HaTzadik because of his almost superhuman ability to thwart the overtures of Eshes Potiphar while being completely separated and isolated from his family. The contrast is obvious. Yosef maintaining his dignity and ruling over his desires versus Amnon, who allows his desires to rule over him. Now, the Kli Yakar makes a fascinating observation and draws further comparison to Yosef, which only adds to Tamar's tragedy. The same way that Eshes Potiphar ripped Yosef's clothing and kept it as planted evidence, so to speak, that Yosef tried to attack her, Amnon as well may have kept Tamar's cloak, meaning that cloak that would cover that Kasonas Pasim, made a ruckus, and he demonstratively threw her out in order to create the impression that it was Tamar who attempted to seduce Amnon, not the other way around. The Navi continues to tell us that Avshalom kept his distance from Amnon for 2 years and let this act stew in his mind, after which point he made a sheep shearing celebration, inviting an unsuspecting Amnon to the celebrations and ordered his servants to kill Amnon. The rest of Avshalom's brothers fled the area because they thought that they were also in danger. David then gets word that Avshalom has killed all of his sons. David tears his clothing, and Yonadav, who comes to the fore again, seems to be full of glee to tell him, "Don't worry, only one of your sons was killed by Avshalom because of what happened with Amnon and Tamar." And it's ironic that Yonadav, the one who originally facilitated Amnon's plan to assault Tamar, is the one who is the news bearer of his death. So Avshalom flees, and the people see a whole mass of people coming towards them. And then Yonadav pipes up again, and he says, "See, Pasuk Lamed Hey 35, Hine b'nei ha-melech ba'u k'dvar avdecha kein haya. Your sons are approaching, just like your servant said, so it was." He says, "See, I told you so." Yonadav is seizing on the opportunity of David's grief to make himself look good, that he is the wise, insightful one, that he is the one that interpreted events correctly. Avshalom flees and stays with his grandfather, Talmai Melech Geshur. Remember, his mother was Macha, who was the daughter of the king of Geshur. David mourned his son Amnon, and then the Navi continues to tell us that Avshalom stayed with his grandfather for 3 years. Then we are told that David was consoled over Amnon, and he missed his son Avshalom, who had fled. They're terrible conflicting emotions for a father who just suffered the loss of one son who had defiled his daughter, and this son was killed by the hands of his other son. But the silver lining in all of this is that after this episode, the result was that Sanhedrin enacted an extension to the Torah prohibition of yichud of a married woman. As a result of Tamar's publicizing what happened to her by crying and putting ashes on her head, Sanhedrin expanded the scope of the iser. The Torah prohibits a married woman to be secluded with a man, but Sanhedrin extended this prohibition to apply to a single woman as well. A single woman cannot be over on the Isser of Yichud. She cannot be secluded with a man. And the reason this was done was in order to prevent similar occurrences in the future. Yichud applies equally to everybody, no matter the greatness or the stature of a person, so that nobody should be placed into a tempting situation, because nobody is immune from temptation. Thank you for studying today. Le'iloi Nishmas, Malka Esther, Bas Tzvi Yosef.